Welcome to Talking Social Studies. You're listening to episode 17, Got Rhythm? Using Music in the Classroom.
Do you think music has a meaning?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's good to be more spiritual soul than anything. Pretty soon I believe that they're going to have to rely on music to get some kind of peace of mind or satisfaction, direction actually.
Podcast where we talk about social studies and education today. Here you will find conversations about strategies, resources, ideas, and more, all designed to help today's social studies teachers impact their students.
Hello, I'm Chris Hitchcock. I teach world history for a private online high school that is affiliated with Indiana University. You can find me on Twitter at chitch94. You can find our Talking Social Studies website at bit.ly/talkingss.
Hi, and I'm Scott Padway. I'm an instructional technology coach in Pleasanton, California, but former social studies teacher. And you can find me on Twitter at Scott Padway.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy Presley, and I'm a history teacher at Broken Arrow High School near Tulsa, Oklahoma. You can follow the Talking Social Studies podcast on Twitter at TALKINSS, or you can follow me at STLNOK.
And you know what, Amy? They can actually do both. All of us follow follow our handles. I'm just, as we're going through our hand. Hi, everybody. I'm Ryan. I'm the fourth leg of the Talking Social Studies team. And I'm just wondering, how much longer do we still need to introduce ourselves?
Have we reached that level?
Oh, man. We may be there. I'm just thinking, we could just say, hey, everybody, I'm Chris. I'm Amy. I'm Scott. It's good. I know. There's something to think about. But hi, everybody. We are of this team. We are four educators who love getting together. Hanging out on a Google Hangout and talking about all things social studies. And I'm on the Twitter. I'm at Creative Ed Tech, former social studies teacher. AP World History used to be my jam. I missed it a lot now that I'm out. But anyway, and so today we've been kicking this idea around for a while, and this is all about music. Regardless of what class you teach, everything from geography to the history, civics, and economics, there's music that's out there, and we all use them in different ways. As a group of trying to be able to plan this podcast, we've been trying to think about how to do it and what to do it. I don't know about you guys, but it seems like one of the more exciting planning and preparation shows that we put together.
I definitely have the most fun putting this one together.
Yeah. And so then at the end, we thought, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to talk about some strategies and how to be able to use music and what music and such. And then we thought at the end, what we're going to do is we're going to share out some of our favorite songs. And originally we thought, let's do a top three or top five. But we ended up with a top 10 list plus some honorable mentions. So we're gonna have a lot at the end here. So
The problem with that top 10 list is I think I need an explanation with every song. And there's, but it's cool comparing them.
Yeah, so at the end, we are going to kind of rapid fire, so let's keep that in mind because we all can go long-winded on all of these songs. We each got 10 songs and more to share, and so we're going to kind of quickly hit about how and why we each use all of these in our class. If you're listening in the car or out in the road, definitely check out our show notes that you can find on our website to be able to get a list of all of these songs, and we're going to put some links on there as well, too, to songs and playlists and such, but you can definitely find a lot of these out there. So let's kick it off. What are we going to do for our first segment, everybody? Scott?
Why it's worthwhile to explore using music in class with students. For me, it's a context piece. I think music, first of all, everybody loves music, right? You've got kids walking around with earbuds. You listen to it on the way to work, unless you're, of course, listening to your favorite Talking Social Studies podcast.
Yeah! music, listen to this.
But in the other, 29 days a month that we don't have a new episode out, people are listening to music. And one thing that's really fascinating to me about it is actually just the medium itself and how that's evolved over time. Today we're moving into this whole electronic thing going on, but just listening to pieces from kind of the turn of the century and these very early recordings, it kind of paints that picture of where we were, in this tech revolution, I guess. But I think it's just a great way to capture kind of what's going on culturally in a time period, right? So I do this Federalist, Anti-Federalist thing. I guess I did it the first year a student taught a government class, and it was like this Mozart, concerto, and then some Sally Gooden. And we just put up an image of you know, kind of a Federalist party, and we played the concerto, and, you know, and the idea was you were pretending you were at this party, right? And then all of a sudden we switched it up. We had a picture of the anti-Federalists out there, and we played Sally Gooden and kind of mixed it up. And again, just trying to think a little bit differently about, you know, the different types of members of society. And it was, you know, I mean, people get there instantly, you know, you can tell by those different types of music, but you know, people love it. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the other beauty to it, is people love listening to music.
They do. What's interesting is that you can kind of put music in two different kind of groupings. You mentioned at the beginning is that, first off, is there music of that period that we're learning about? And that, then it transcends from, because that's really kind of a primary source, right?
Yeah. I mean,
go ahead.
No, I mean, yeah, it's a primary source, but it's not, gosh, that's a really tough one. Right? Yes, it's a primary source, but it's not a primary source, depending on what you're analyzing, right? If you're looking at the medium itself in that piece, that's a primary source. If you're listening and using the words, right, I guess that moves kind of more into the secondary world.
Yeah, because then you also have music that is from another time period talking about previous time periods.
Right.
Right. So if you're going to do the Cold War, let's say, like, because, I mean, you get to the Cold War music and that's just a thing of its own, right? But, like, you can listen to music from that time period about how people were feeling anxiety and fear and all that kind of stuff. But there's also music about the Cold War that came afterwards. And so it's an interesting sort of, you know, even which music you're choosing to use.
Yeah, it covers everything, right? That's why we love it. Mm-hmm. It's everything.
Mm-hmm. It's meta.
Yeah. Amy, what about you?
Well, yeah, I agree with Scott there. Music really is context, and it's, gosh, it's that emotion that it invokes. It's such a visceral, strong response. You really feel it. My kids used to tease me about, I had students a couple of years ago that could predict what the lesson was going to be like that day based on walking by my classroom in the morning and what was I playing. Like, they were like, if Zeppelin was playing, like, it was on, we were going to be up to something. And it was funny because they figure you out based on that kind of emotive response. So I love using music to set the stage. I love kids coming in and something's playing, and and it's such a good linguistic tool. I mean, if you've ever heard Dave Burgess talk about using Tupac, teaching, you know, U.S. history, amazing, amazing lesson, and really connecting with kids over it. It's just so cool. I love it.
Yeah. And I find that, like you've said, music is kind of a universal thing. It's like you have some kids that are really good at playing music. Like, music is a really important part of their personalities and how they express themselves. But even students who don't play an instrument or don't sing, music is still important to all of them. They all have, like, their own playlists, you know, what, you know, or their mood music, you know, whatever. It's like everybody is into some kind of music. So I found that when I was teaching online in my previous position, we had live sessions. The students weren't required to attend them, but one of the ways I kind of encouraged them to attend was I said, hey, send me a request. I'll play music. I'll play your song before class starts. And it was amazing the number of kids who would come just to see if I was playing their song that day. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they would stick around for the rest of the lesson, which was good. But then it also, like you guys said, it helps set the stage for a time period or sets the mood for a lesson. It can be a great hook. You know, to even just play a song at the beginning, and then it's like, what does this have to do with what we're talking about today? So I just think it has such a wide variety of usage, you know, like you said, even breaking down lyrics, you know, setting it in within a context of a time period and what it is saying about a particular event or a place or a group. You know, it's so diverse as far as the ways you can use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so interesting. Yeah, I'm sitting here just thinking more and more ways how I want to be able to use it in future classes. And I hear the three of you guys talking, and what I like about the universality that you all mentioned, that it's something no matter where you're from, even what culture, because we get kids all the time with from different cultures, right? Who and the music that they bring with them. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So I'm jumping in here. And so when I was thinking about this question, why is it worthwhile? The first thing I thought back is while I, when I was in, when we're all in those education classes and they talk about learning styles and right, we all have different strengths and weaknesses and how some people are auditory learners. And I think that that's music really taps into those particular, those people. And for those of you who are listening to this podcast, you're probably somebody along those lines. That's why you're probably choosing to listen to a podcast in the first place. And I'm sharing a link in here from historians.org. And it's an older article. And by older, I mean like 1996. But I love this. Oh, I know. Ridiculous.
And gotta love the cassette tapes.
Yeah, no. But you got to love the internet because you can find research and, from different periods. And this is about how different drummers, different drummers using music to teach history. And there's this one line in there that really kind of resonates with me. And it says that music is also a primary cultural source that can provide teachers with a novel way to engage students with historical issues, to get them to practice skills of analysis and to promote cross-cultural understanding. And I found that so engaging because I thought back to when I was teaching, one of the more frustrating classes I had the opportunity to teach was advanced geography. And as a history teacher, they basically threw me in the middle of the summer. And they said, "Hey, Ryan, you're going to teach an advanced geography class." And I'm like, "Well, I've never taught regular geography." And they're like, "It doesn't matter. We got a book for you." So they gave me the book. And the book, I thought, okay, I have no one to lean towards. I have no PLC group to work with. And I just got this book. And I'm not going to say which publisher it was, but I look at the book and they said, "Hey, by the way, you also have a website." And the website has password protected, has the PowerPoints that go along with it. And I thought, okay, well, that's a starting point. And I open up the PowerPoint, and I'll share a screenshot here in a second in our show notes of what these PowerPoints look like. And it was unbelievably awful about what the publishers thought you want in teaching. And the one that I'm going to put up there is the idea of they were talking about it was the chapter on culture, and there was a wonderful passage in the book. It was a good book, and they were talking about how music sort of evolves and changes across different places. And they were talking about how hip hop has a much more global influence than as an American genre as opposed to like country music. Country has not had the global spread that hip hop has. And they started talking about Algerian hip hop and all these other places. That is fantastic. The PowerPoint slide that they provide was simply just the definition with nothing else. And it said, by the way, example, Algerian hip hop. That's all it wrote. And I thought this and I thought, this is a wonderful opportunity for a teaching moment. I just have to go out and find an example of Algerian hip hop and play that
for my kids.
The
days before YouTube?
No, this was actually during YouTube. This was about four or five years ago.
Okay, so that makes a difference.
It does. Yeah. What did you do before then? You know, what did you do with
Algerian hip hop would be a hard thing to track down.
Yeah. And so the kids had a wonderful opportunity. Then we started looking around at different ideas about where hip hop, what it sounds like in Korea and in China and in Latin America. And it really helped understand the idea of all these different sort of culture and how it spreads and breeds and takes forth. And I thought, man, that was fantastic. But I felt like this was a learning moment that the textbook publishers didn't necessarily tap into. They understood the definition and the meaning behind it all. But the idea, I think what music really does is it brings things and makes them real. Oh, yeah, so my passion. And so I find it extremely worthwhile to be able to connect with that. And so that's going to take us off to the next segment. And Scott, we'll start with you. But how do you incorporate music in your teaching? So that's one of the way that I did. But so if you could share a little about how you use it in your teaching, and then also possibly what are some ways in which that people can find, like YouTube or some other ways to be able to find the music that fits those needs.
Yeah, well, so I mean, two very different routes. I do want to talk a little bit more about what I did with my class. You know, I use music for a lot of things. I use it for warm-ups regularly, and those were always kind of the old ones. I remember, you know, I have it linked, I think, in my honorable mention list here, but, you know, the World War I, you know, "Johnny, get your gun, take them on," right? And the kids think, you know, it takes a while, and they got to get over, like, the kind of hokiness of the actual piece from that time, but, you know, you start breaking it down and breaking into the lyrics. And what the real meaning of that is and what it says about, you know, the sentiment of the United States. But I got to tell you, my favorite is the Vietnam Culture Day. You know, we go outside, we bring the little speaker out, mm-hmm. we all sit in a circle, and we just go through some songs talking about whether they're pro-war, whether they're, you know, anti-war, you know, coming doves and hawks, and really breaking down to what people are saying. So the three songs, well, I guess we'll talk about those later, but you know, it was really one of the days that I really looked forward to. And I think the students really enjoyed also just going outside and being able to just kind of unplug, but trying to take a point into the counterculture movement with some of the music that was coming out during the Vietnam War.
Hey, Scott, if you don't mind, we're going to jump in. We had tons to get to later. So dive in a little bit with some of the songs that you were talking about there.
Yeah. So, you know, I saw them on this list, right? But my top three were Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth, Fortunate Son by Creedence, and then Born in the USA by our boy Bruce. And what I loved about those were they're all kind of just very different pieces throughout the war. You know, where For What It's Worth was actually written about the LA riots.
It was?
Yeah. And if you dive into it's kind of interesting, but it really took this kind of it took this spinoff into, you know, this anti-Vietnam anthem. But it was, if you start doing a little research, I think I linked up here Shmoop, which has some music, whole music page. And if you kind of dive into it, they have some songs that you can kind of click into, and they'll give you a little bit of context about them. But so we talked about that. We talked about Fortunate Son. And then we, you know, closed with Born in the USA, which is a song a lot of kids loved. But looking back, and I thought that was always interesting because that's painting the picture from, you know, 10 years afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. What's happened after these people have returned home. And so it was just kind of an interesting way to, you know, cover the changing perspectives throughout. But it was always hard. It was finding the Hawks songs, you know, I mean, it had like Merle Haggard's Fight Inside of Me on there. But that was always the challenge. You know, there was so much at that point coming out anti-war.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think Amy, I don't want to steal your thunder, but I think Amy's going to talk about some sort of modern day Hawk stuff and comparisons later on. Right.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And then I'm thinking also, you mentioned about Bruce Springsteen, even about how that one song could be seen and talked about historically in different ways about how Reagan used it, you know, and yeah. How that was not necessarily the intent. And anyway,
Do you know what the song is? Yeah.
I also went in here, though. I kind of linked up some student projects. So I also used songs as kind of a show what you know a lot of times. So we did like 1920s slang and songs. And these aren't, you know, they're not the greatest videos. I don't actually have the lyrics anymore from them. But, you know, whether it's they had to insert, you know, their 1920s slang terms into their song about, in this case, the women's rights movement, whether they were creating their own, you know, pro or anti-war song. And then we did this We Didn't Start the Fire thing, which was cool. And mm-hmm. So we started the year off with We Didn't Start the Fire. It was a way to just kind of break the ice. Everyone had to go find some, you know, kind of the references and be prepared to share how you think that connects to what we're going to talk about this year. And we revisited at the end in conjunction with these posters we would do. So everyone would get a topic. It was kind of a review thing of, you know, a period. So World War II, you know, the Cold War, the Civil Rights Movement, whatever. And they would have to come up with, you know, their list of terms and basically become experts on those. But then the song component was, well, we were rewriting the words to We Didn't Start the Fire, and they had different, you know, the first stanza has to be basically everything through the Civil War. The second one's going to take us through World War I, and then the last ones are going to be about this. And then they got to write their own last verse to it. And so we all come together and, you know, and sing them. And it was just great. I mean, I have kids bringing in guitars and keyboards and all sorts of things, you know, because it really taps into some of those passions that some students have. You know, others aren't musically inclined in the way that, you know, some of these students are, but I feel like everyone could kind of get around to it and, you know, play their own role. And it was just a lot of fun. It was a good way to kind of wrap up our year.
And thanks for sharing all these links too. So like you mentioned, you got links to all of your, to some of the student work as well.
Yeah. I mean, and it's really just creating the opportunity for the students. And there's so much now with, you know, GarageBand and Soundtrap and all these other like digital tools that students have. But, you know, I just went on YouTube. I found like the instrumental We Didn't Start the Fire, and I just played it over and over. They'd come up and they'd sing it.
It's fun. Karaoke.
So if they didn't want to embarrass themselves too much, you know, that's where the guitar came from, and that's where they started bringing in their stuff. They're like, man, we better make this this better. But it's just, you know, it's a fun way to kind of let kids represent their learning.
Yeah, and for those of you have, I mean, I think we all have seen it, but on YouTube, you can find whatever songs that you guys are using. You can find instrumental or karaoke versions of them, and have kids make their own lyrics is a fantastic idea.
I mean, who knows? Maybe Hamilton 2 will be written in your class.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Awesome, Amy. What do you got for us?
Gosh. Okay. So my favorite way of using music was when I taught government. I loved pulling up the protest songs through the ages. But really my favorite was when we got to the modern times, because kids don't necessarily recognize the music of their own generation and look at it in the same lens that they look at, like, say, Woody Guthrie. That's before, so that's a primary source document. They don't look at the world around them today in that kind of lens. So I love talking about, 90s and early 2000s music. I love pulling out groups like Rage Against the Machine and talking about, you know, how music became a platform of protest, particularly with that group, because they just had some great examples that the kids were familiar with. And even talking about like Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine and his kind of jaunt as the Night Watchman and Occupy Wall Street and all of that stuff that kind of came out of it. I remember teaching government when Paul Ryan said how what a fan he was and how that kind of blew up in his face a little bit. Because it's like, dude, he's kind of singing about everything against what you're doing here, and making that into a teachable moment. But one thing I noticed the other day was towards the end of the year, a former student sent me a link to Billboard's list of the top 20 protest songs of 2017. And it came out like about a week before New Year's. And it's really, really cool to look through that kind of societal lens. You know, Eminem's big song that hit the news is on there. I mean, there's just about like every genre represented. And, you know, having kids look through trends, oh my gosh, there's all kinds of political references in that one. The group, A Perfect Circle, coming out with an album April 20th this year. And what they've released so far is very much a full of protest and very political. And it's interesting because you see these bands that are semi-political before becoming really political now. And just having those conversations with kids about, okay, so what does this mean? And what parallels can you make? And then what's the flip side? You take Black Eyed Peas and you take Toby Keith and you talk 9/11 and you're like, okay, whoa, two different approaches here. You get into some really kind of heavy hitting stuff. But I love having those discussions with kids. But it definitely requires a lot of kind of front loading and relationship building and definitely previewing.
Definitely previewing.
Yeah. and a general maturity, because kids have to be, music creates that emotional response. And then you add added emotion with the political climate on it. And you can have some really amazing teachable moments, but you need to know what can of worms you could possibly be opening in the process. I miss teaching government so much right now.
This is, for those of you who are listening, I've not seen this. This Billboard list is.
And it's all full of the music videos. So like not only are the songs listed, but they've got like the music videos embedded. So you can, you can pull them up and play them right there.
And I feel so, can I be honest? I mean, I don't say old, but out of touch, out of date. Like I don't know most of this. I'm 46. Like I'm looking at some of this and I'm like, gosh, dang it.
I'll be honest. I recognized about five.
Yeah.
On the list out of the 20. I'm like, okay. I tease my students. I'm like, I've crossed that bridge. I'm not the young fun teacher anymore.
Yeah, but that's an interesting, maybe this is another topic. Like how can we still be relevant? And because this is real, right? These are the songs that people are singing and listening to. And are, do we know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Interesting.
I ought to stay out of that episode. It's depressing. No.
Do you see the subjects of some of these things? Everything from Puerto Rico to anti-Trump to
women's movement.
Women's movement, fight like a girl. Like, man,
It's. I mean, but when you look at that list, I mean, you really kind of get a nice like time capsule of what was 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you would do, I'm assuming that's what we would want them to try to get the connection. Cause you could look at 1968 and do the same thing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that'd be great. Just the top songs of pick a year and don't tell them what year, but say, give it a guess or what's going on and what happened this year.
Cause I think we spend not too much time, but we focus on 1968. We focus on these dates and these times and listen to this, everybody, we're doing the Cold War and or we're doing, you know, Johnny, Get Your Gun and that kind of stuff. Like, I think that you can take it that musicians really are in many ways, the modern day poets when they speak about love, they speak about passion, they speak about angst. Yeah. But all right, Chris, what about you? What do you got?
Well, when I taught U.S. history back in the day, which it's been a while since I did something similar to Scott when I had overhead pictures on the overhead projector, transparencies that I would flip on while I was playing songs from the Forrest Gump soundtrack, like Fortunate Son and For What It's Worth by Buffalo Springfield. And yeah, so talk about people who've lived through technology changes.
We're old. We are old.
Get off my lawn.
My lawn. And we're doing a podcast. We're hip, right?
Hey, we went from like banging chalk erasers to podcasting. I feel like we've done it.
Yes,
that's right. We've been through it all, people. I even used a Ditto machine back in the day. So, anyway, to get back to music. Most of my career, I've taught world history. And so that can be a little challenging. It's gotten a little easier with YouTube and things like that, being able to find music from different cultures. But one of the things I like to do, you know, especially when you get into kind of like the early modern period in Europe, you're dealing with like, I don't know, we always have to cover like Romanticism and nationalism and, you know, kind of all the stuff that was happening, you know, the transition from, you know, like the classical period to, and so anyway, and so one of the nice things to do, what I found was a kind of a nice break from some of the typical stuff that we would do is like, okay, well, let's see what classical music, like classical as in, you know, from a particular time period, like the 1700s, sounded like compared to music from the Romantic period, you know, whereas much more like, you know, the classical stuff would be like Mozart or Canon in D or something. And then, you know, it's very regimented, it's very patterned. And then you get into stuff like like Hungarian dances or something by Brahms. And it's very, you know, it has like this kind of flair of like this folk music and stuff like that. So you get kind of like this nationalist appeal, but then it's just a totally different sound. And it always kind of made the kids think, you know, they were like, oh, you know, that my parents' music sounds so much different from my music. And it's like, well, classical music is not all the same thing either. You know, just because it's played by like an orchestra doesn't mean it's all the same thing. So, you know, that was kind of fun. And then I think it's really interesting, you know, and I haven't actually done this, but I'm, you know, when we were talking about this, I said, you know, it'd be really, I thought to myself, it would be really interesting to take, like, how do, like, especially in the 1800s and the 1900s, how did composers like that were writing operas about different cultures, you know, kind of like use some of their music style? So like you take an opera like Turandot, which is about China, and how the music sounds. And could you compare that with what music from China in the 1920s actually sounded like?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think there's,
I love the idea about telling, like, we often focus too much on lyrics, read the lyrics. What do they mean? But right. Like, I like to step back and say, well, actually the feeling of the music tells you right. about nationalism or romanticism or Chinese communism. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, how do you feel when you're listening to this? Like if you're listening to Mozart versus, one of the more romantic periods, you know, it's, or then if you're listening to Stravinsky or something, that's mm-hmm. like totally out there, like you're listening to The Rite of Spring, that's literally caused riots when it was premiered in the state, in the audience, you know, it's, you know, what emotion is being evoked?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, there's just some really powerful things. And so then I just added in the notes some of the different, you know, I just was kind of like playing around with some different sources. So like if you go to the Library of Congress, which is awesome for so many things, I'm sure many people use it, but if you know about their National Jukebox section of their website, where they have recordings of things that were made from 1900 to 1925 on like 75 or 78, I guess it's 78 RPM albums. And so you can, you know, play around in there and find some really early.
I've never seen this.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. And I just love, they call it the National Jukebox because then you get to explain what a jukebox is.
It's like, kids, it's like a playlist. It's like Spotify.
But it was actual albums in this place. You put money in it.
Yeah.
So just like bizarro things like that. And then Google Arts and Culture. I hadn't really explored the music part of it, but they do have music things. So I just kind of searched music and then put the link to that in our show notes. And there's different curated sources and things that show like museums that specialize in musical instruments, or, you know, here you have this curated lists and recordings from different universities, music departments, and things like that. So, you know, there's just a lot of Google Arts and Culture is like the ultimate rabbit hole anyway, because like as soon as you look for something and then you're like, oh my gosh, I never knew about, whoa, I got to check this out. There's also Sounds Around the World, which is kind of a game type of site to use music to learn about different cultures.
I don't know this one either. That's why I love doing this stuff. Finding
it. It is fun.
And then I have to give a shout out to a program that I used to listen to in our last location that was on, like, I think on like Saturday or Sunday nights in our local NPR station, Afropop Worldwide, and just had some really cool, you know, just programs on music from different places in the African region, in the Caribbean. And it was just really cool because I was just like, oh my gosh, this is something I don't know anything about, but it's so cool to not just hear the music, but also hear the stories behind them and, you know, what the songs are about. So anyway, I just think there's so many options out there for finding cool music, even if you teach world history.
Yeah, because we all go, we all run straight to YouTube, and YouTube's amazing. It's got a plethora of stuff, but how do you know where to begin? And then how do you just, because you can find things, but it's the searching is a challenge if you don't even know what to search for.
Well, and it's the other information that you need about it too, right? Like finding the song is one thing, but you know, it's a whole nother skill to break it down and really kind of analyze, you know, whether it's the lyrics or it's just, you know, the musical components to it. And if you can find it somewhere that somebody's done some of that work for you, it's a nice cheat sheet to have.
Interesting. I'm checking out this kit. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm checking out the Sounds Around thing. And it looks like, and so they have these kits. They're sold out. School, a teacher's kit, school license, 5th to 12th grade. Because this is the game. You get 10 color-coded geo musical maps, 37 music tracks, teacher's guide, all this stuff. So it's a game to be able to play. Sonic field trip for your classroom. I want one of these.
That's what we're doing wrong, is this should be talking social studies the game.
The game.
That's another topic.
Side note, and I don't have the answer on this thing, but we were talking about earlier about digital a little bit, and anybody can use your heads. And why do you think that albums are on their way back? Why is vinyl finding a way back with their younger kids? Because I have two daughters, and they both want vinyl. They both wanted record players. And they want albums.
Really?
And you see a dramatic increase. Now it's not beating digital at all, but it's going up. CD sales are going dramatically down, but vinyl is going. It's a large jump. It's still not very high, but a large jump. Anybody know have a theories on that?
It's the sound. There's a very unique sound with vinyl.
Yeah, get the scratches.
Yeah, I'm doing some research here, and it says, like, I found one that says top six reasons why vinyl's back, and one of them is sound quality. A lot of people argue vinyl is better.
Interesting.
Interesting. Some of these other ones are the thrill of the hunt. There's a community. There's something tangible. But I like number one, that listening is an active, not a passive experience.
That's true. Got to drop the needle.
You got to drop the needle. You got to sit there with the album. You got to think. You have to sit down and wait and listen. I mean, I remember, you know, popping in those headphones and putting on Sticks and just I'm going to come sail away. Like, this is it. Anyway. Awesome. Hey, great conversation. I'm going to jump in here real quick. So how I use music is I'm a big fan of doing stations. I've shared that in the past on the podcast here about breaking kids up into groups. And one of those groups, I would usually do a class of 30, 35 kids. I would do, you know, three groups. And I would love to try to be able to do one of the stations have something to do with music and audio. I range the whole, you know, the whole theory about worksheets and what to have them do. So what do you do when a kid listens to music? Like, how, you know, I want you to feel the music. I want you to feel the lyrics. I feel like if you just tell them to like listen and discuss, oftentimes it would go nowhere. So I tried varying degrees of kind of questions and worksheets and tell me what you thought or what do you think these particular lyrics meant. But I really love the opportunities that I was able to man that particular station and have the kids go, let's say, analyze a primary source and another one, but I could sit with the kids who are listening and get back and forth. So that was kind of one of the things I really liked, but a lot of it was based on those particular songs. And then I tried doing a fair amount of listening at home, but, you know, give the kids something to listen to on their own, tell them to go for a walk and let's have some conversations. But I think no matter what it is, if you're doing it in a group work, if you're doing it in class, you're doing it at home, it's really kind of the questions and the conversations that you can really have that go along with it, though. And we had talked about lyrics, and I think I spent almost too much time dissecting lyrics a little bit because I wanted to be able to find so much meaning in those. And I feel like if I would, if I'm back in the classroom, I'd really want to focus a lot more on the feeling of music. So those are some ideas to think about that we've all shared. And then the last piece I wanted to be able to check out is something that I found at the National Social Studies Conference that I haven't had an opportunity to really play with. So I can't necessarily give it a recommendation per se, except they gave me a really cool sticker. And that is teachrock.org. And Scott, were you and I walking around when we got to this group?
No, table? I don't remember these guys.
Yeah, so teachrock, you got to love it, a social studies conference. You walk past and it's a couple dudes in like leather jackets. And you're like, okay, this is not your normal like social studies people. So this is, you mentioned Bruce before. This is an organization from Stevie Van Zandt from the E Street Band. And he put together a project that he's bringing together educational materials at no cost. This is all free. These are lesson planned collections and resources that covered sort of the different disciplines. So it's not necessarily just social studies, but they want to be able to dive into popular music and how teachers can ultimately use them. So teachrock.org. When I do get some time, I want to dive into a little bit more of them and see kind of what those lessons ultimately look like, but you can check it out as well too. All right.
Just on a surface level, it looks like there's some potential in this.
Yeah. I love rock and rollers that have a mission too. And I like, you know, they often have a mission in their music, but I like when they have a little bit of to do something else, do something more. All right. So it's time. We've talked a little bit about how we use music. And so we dabble with some of the songs that we do. So now we each got 10 songs. There's 40 songs we need to hit, people, and we can't dive in real deep. So we need to think, do we want to do one at a time, or do we just want to have each person go and hit all 10? What are some thoughts?
Let's just run them.
Just run them. Yeah.
One person at a time, or each, or one each.
Let's go one.
Do one person at a time, because it'll go faster that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm first. I'll go.
Any order. Doesn't matter. Let's just call it.
I kind of mentioned we didn't start the fire. Born in the USA, Fortunate Son, For What It's Worth. So that takes care of my top four. Number five, Newsies, The World Will Know. If you talk about yellow journalism in your class, that's a great one. Pulitzer and Hearst.
Is that from the musical?
Yeah, it's from the musical.
I've not seen the musical.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. That's a good one. Then obviously, I mean, anything from Hamilton's on there, but I specifically love the cabinet battles.
Oh, so good.
You know, Amy, you mentioned Woody. His Union Made song, I use a YouTube link of someone else singing it, but when we talk about, you know, the labor movement, it's one of my go-tos on there. And then the, you know, I mentioned over there, and the Five Themes of Geography.
That is solid. Dude. I love that song.
That is, I used to make my students get up. I totally forgot about this one. It's only at number nine on my list because I just added it there. But I used to make my geography kids, you know, on like day two or three, we'd get up and we'd sing that song until everyone was, you know, participating and singing along. And if someone would stop, then we'd start the dance. And so we'd add in like one movement every time we go through, you know? So we had like one thing. And then if it wasn't like up to satisfaction, we'd go again. And I had one stubborn class. I didn't want to sing along with it. And we ended up, man, we had about 15 moves to this dance as we got through each of the five themes of geography.
When I mentioned before, like I didn't know about teaching geography at all. This was the first thing I found. Someone goes, you gotta have five themes of geography. I'm like, all right. I looked at it. I'm like, yeah, that went well.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's really, it's one of those that, you know, I added the dance because it really needs it to kind of to make it work for everybody, but it was good.
And another great thing that teachers is you got to just let go, right? Sometimes you got to be goofy, and being goofy really kind of opens them up to, and you break down a lot of walls.
Yeah, oh, totally. I guess I had the harpsichord concerto, Sally Gooden, I mentioned, and then my honorable mention list, you know, Schoolhouse Rock's on there. The Animaniacs, I think Ryan's going to talk about them, but I used the Panama Canal one.
I don't know that
and,
one.
And, you know, yeah, that's my list.
You went fast.
You did go fast. Wow. Yeah.
Well, you know, I jumped in earlier, talked about three or four of them already, so.
And Scott has linked up on the show notes to, I'm assuming those are all like YouTube videos, yeah, right, to those songs.
Yeah, I think most of them are YouTube.
Nice. Putting the pressure on the Amy and Chris. Do you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, who wants to go next?
So I'll go. I had mentioned how I like to use Rage Against the Machine in class for protest music, but my favorite Rage song to use is Know Your Enemy, because the kids find it kind of curious that I would use a song that would talk about going against your teachers. I mentioned Woody Guthrie and how like he gets used, but then it's just the first verse. They don't go into the rest of it, and playing the rest of it, the kids are like, whoa. Yeah. There's a little more to that. And then I mentioned that comparing Toby Keith's Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue with the Black Eyed Peas' Where's the Love, and how they were both written about 9/11, but two kind of totally different directions there.
That is, when I saw you had that on the list, I'm like, that is such a great comparison. Oh.
Oh, that's totally not my idea. I got that from Christine Bond in an AP workshop. But yeah, I use
that's
it now.
That's interesting too, how like the different genres kind of. Just in general, speak to those kind of different perspectives.
Well, because kids are usually familiar with one if they're not familiar with the other.
And that's one of the things I do, but not even music. To teach kids, they all learn Venn diagram from the very beginning, right? From second grade. And they're like, but when I try to get to them, I do the first thing I do is like, let's compare music. Let's do, and I show them Venn diagram. And I'm like, let's compare hip hop versus country. And it's interesting that they will, when you ask them, they all say they're very different, but I say, let's get creative with the comparisons. And it's interesting how many similarities that they can come up with these two genres, everything from they're both inherently American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they start going the deeper, the more broader they get, it's easier. So you can say, okay, guys, think about generalization. So they go, oh, here's one. They both love denim. You're like, yes. Denim's great. Now take that same denim, but go differently. Now get detailed, and they go, okay, one of them is worn very tight, the other one is worn very loose. Great use of denim. Nice. And so the idea that they can do this wonderful sort of back and forth, it's about how you look at it with a lens in terms of comparison, similarities and differences.
Super cool. I'll have to try that now. Okay. See, now my kids are gonna love this. I like using Baby It's Cold Outside. Explaining context, I do a whole activity where I pull like those classic World War II era holiday songs and a few new ones, and we talk about context. Like every year talks about Baby It's Cold Outside like it's some sort of, you know, rapist. But in the context of the era, it's got a whole different meaning.
Yeah.
So, but then I always show there.
He is a bit pushy. He is.
Yeah, a little bit. But when we talk about the women's, like the women's movement of the 60s, like before then, and when you set the context of it, it has a whole different lens to it. But then right behind it, you play the literal music video version, and the kids are just like losing it. It's hilarious.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, gosh. Chris, you're going to bring up Strange Fruit, so I'll leave that one for you. Another Animaniacs one, the Capitals song. If you ever have a kid who needs to learn the 50 capitals for their elementary school test, the Animaniacs song is the way to go.
Okay, I've never heard of the Animaniacs, and I had a kid that needed to learn those last year. I could have like saved myself a lot of angst probably.
And I don't think any of us have them, but the Animaniacs also have all the countries in the world too.
Yeah.
At least at that time. Yeah.
Are they coming back? I thought I heard a rumor. Is Animaniacs coming back?
There's a reboot coming, I heard. Netflix, I think.
Interesting.
Smart Songs is a couple of teachers who do government related, like kind of Animaniac kind of style songs. But their Bill of Rights one's really good. Redemption Song, playing Bob Marley's version and then Chris Cornell's cover, is an interesting comparison. The story behind Yankee Doodle's always hilarious.
I don't know what that is.
Oh my gosh, you never heard the story behind Yankee Doodle? Okay. So story behind Yankee Doodle was that it was originally written by British troops during the French Indian War to make fun of these kind of Yankee goofballs. And the Macaroni Club was a notorious effeminate club in London of high fashion for men. And so that whole line, stick a feather in his hat, call it macaroni, like these thick, weirdo Americans don't know anything about fashion. They're backwards. They couldn't even shoot a gun straight if you gave it to them. Well, the story of the song is, so it's a knowable ditty. And like Americans, we have this habit of taking insults and then turning into a sense of pride. So then when Cornwallis is surrendering to Washington troops, the American troops start playing Yankee Doodle.
Ah, look at that. I learned something today.
So that's always just a fun song, a fun, like, hey, story behind the music kind of thing to give to the kids. And I have a poster with the lyrics on the wall. So they're like, we talk about, you know, what does this lyric mean? Did you ever think it was a pasta? Yeah, no, it's not the pasta. It's a reference to a club. And then
super cool.
God. Yeah, super cool. And then I try to grab some strange songs to just for fun in class. Living Colors, Cult of Personality, mm-hmm. System of a Down, which is one they always freak out when they hear because they're like, this is kind of loud and crazy. The Story Behind When the Levee Breaks about the flood in the Mississippi. Of course, Hamilton. Blues Traveler is always fun to pull out hook when you want to talk about how music can create an emotive response and make no sense lyrically, and how he's making fun of his own industry when you read the lyrics. A new band, kind of a new Andro Beat, is a band that's a professor from SLU and a couple other gals who kind of got together, and some of their music was written after the Michael Brown incident in St. Louis, and they look at social issues. And so that's an interesting look at modern music because their stuff's come out in the last couple of years. Mm. They're a kind of grassroots, kind of local festival kind of group. So they're kind of interesting to follow.
That's awesome.
But that's me.
Awesome. That's awesome. I love you got Cult of Personality in there too. All right. Cool. All right, Chris.
All right. Well, the Beatles Revolution. I love to play it. Not when we were in the Cold War, but when we were in doing like the French Revolution and the Haitian Revolution, just like we're getting in the revolutionary mindset here. Man in the Mirror, that's how I used to end my world history courses every year. Working in a Coal Mine by Lee Dorsey for when you're doing like the industrial period. I think Scott and I already both mentioned some of these songs, Buffalo Springfield for What It's Worth and Fortunate Son. I used to love using Do You Hear the People Sing from Les Mis.
Do you hear the people sing? Yeah.
I love how you both jumped into that one.
Yeah, I love that. I love that musical. Sorry. So anyway, yeah. And I would refrain from playing all of it for them. But anyway, and we talked about the lyrics and things. We Shall Overcome for the civil rights movement, Strange Fruit for when you're talking about all the lynchings and violence against African Americans, like in the early 20th century, and just the power of that song. I mean, and then like I mentioned before about using kind of classical music versus like romanticism. So we used to use like Canon in D, but then, you know, the 1812 overture and, you know, the whole thing with Napoleon. And I love like at the end, you hear the Marseillaise come in and then the, you know, all the cannons and stuff. And so, yeah, that was always a rousing way to end the, you know, talk about Napoleon's defeat and play him out with the 1812 overture. Napoleon. Yeah. Before we talked about his exile and everything, but yeah, so
your honorable mention, what do you got?
I've got I'm Just a Bill because I grew up with that. Mozart, Brahms that I mentioned before, and the Rite of Spring, and just talking about how people literally like came to blows. There was like a riot when Rite of Spring premiered.
Yeah, great lesson about how literally how music can,
yeah, because it was just people. So freaking weird.
I love how you said that so gently, because my brain went like a whole different inappropriate way of saying how music messes with people.
And then Aaron Copland, like you have a lot of options there. I mean, Lincoln Portrait, but Appalachian Spring, Fanfare for the Common Man, just so much, you know, like Americana kind of music. Maple Leaf Rag, just talking about like jazz and thing. You can also show some Martha Graham in there too. Bob Marley, Three Little Birds. And then Ladysmith Black Mambazo. They have a song, Long Walk to Freedom. I mean, you could totally play that when you're talking about Nelson Mandela. And, you know, that's the title of his autobiography. And, you know, and I think, you know, like probably most people in the United States, my first introduction to them was with the Paul Simon Graceland album. And then that gets into a whole other discussion. Yeah, and that gets into a whole discussion too about, because there was a lot of controversy about him going there to like record the album, because there was a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? You know, there was all these protests about people going, you know, like there was the big divestment movement for people to not be investing in South Africa, and some people saw it as, you know, kind of making the South African government look a little better, even though I don't think that was Paul Simon's intent. But so, I mean, you could have like so much to work with there, you know, that. But anyway, that's mine.
Oh, so much. I just feel like it's so much I want to listen to right now.
We should make a playlist just for like.
I got to hear Ryan's list here, because the first song you've got in your list, my kids like are absolutely obsessive over.
They go crazy. And now that first one, I'm gonna go opposite. So that's gonna be my number one.
I love. I've been watching Ryan like readjust his list as we've been going. But I want to talk because I added 11 and 12 that I got to get back to. But
oh, gotcha. All right, so I'll do mine and you can come back to 11 and 12.
Oh, this is never going to – this podcast will never end.
And I'm telling you, people, yeah, definitely. We check these things out for our show notes because we feel like we could just go forever on these things. my past as a history teacher, world history, is collecting these songs. And again, talking about my age, at the end of the years, I would produce CDs. We had a 10 CD. That's so cool. We had a 10 CD disc burner. I could make one and then put 10 blank ones in and make 10 at a time.
That's so cool.
I know.
That's amazing.
It was a beast. It was super. How is this thing? It was just like a giant tower. One on the top, 10 on the bottom. Hit record.
Was it like a mini fridge?
Oh yeah. It's straight like this is what pirates do, I guess. This was a while ago. So I think the statute of limitations is over. But I would make a CD for my kids of all the songs that we played and we listened to either for fun to set the class or things that we would dissect the lyrics and all that. And many kids, you know, would come back later and say, I still got that CD or I was listening to that in the car and all that kind of stuff. So it was some great memories for me. And sort of one of the reasons why I really wanted to even do this episode is because I felt like the music has, I felt like I've connected with kids after I've had them in my class, because I think music helped to do that. And so here's my top 10 plus honorable mentions. Number 10, They Might Be Giants. The first song I play with the year, and that's Mesopotamians. Mm-hmm. And the kids, if you've not heard the song, they do, they make Sargon and Hammurabi fun characters. And number 9, Scott mentioned earlier the idea about playing songs as primary sources. And so this one is a British song, Your King and Your Country Want You. When we talk about World War One and the motives of militarism and alliances, imperialism, and nationalism, I like the kids to be able to hear nationalism in 1914 about how it's your duty to go to war. Number 8 is from the Disney movie Jungle Book, I Want to Be Like You. I try to be a little bit, not too bashing, but say, hey, Disney and the Jungle Book, it's a little, this is imperialism at its height, to say that, you know, these people want to be like the white folks, and they're not necessarily the most viewed the most favorably. It look a little savage. Number 7, I have a couple of these. This is from a group called Boney M, and they do a song about Rasputin. Mm-hmm. And Boney M is straight up like from the 70s ABBA.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. The kids just love this song because they go crazy for Rasputin, Amy, right?
They do. Well, I mean, his character, I mean, you can't, there's no way Hollywood could make a character more just crazy and interesting as Rasputin.
That was super. And I felt bad I'm not teaching anymore because I just saw they did an episode on him on Drunk History. And I'm like, oh my God. That is so good. Rasputin.
That's what, like the unofficial topic, like show of class, because the kids are like, I'm like, okay, I can't promote the show.
I can't promote your history.
But at the same time, if you
I'm not going to tell you,
show,
you can't watch it.
I know. I would imagine how many of the high school kids would like to see you that way, though. Like.
Oh, they came through Tulsa and the kids are like, are you going? I'm like, are you kidding me? I can't lose my job over that. Career goal number 1, never be that teacher on the news. This is not a good plan.
I know.
Yeah. And how ironic, Rasputin for Drunk History. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah. Poster child for.
Number 6 for me, I'm going to do Sting. This is during my Cold War unit. And I talk about the Russians. Do the Russians love their kids too? And I love sort of that idea that think about them not as necessarily enemies. Number 5, I'm also doing Les Mis. I do Les Mis. I do the song Red and Black. And I use that when we go from the Enlightenment to the Romanticism, about how the song goes from hope to despair. And I talked about how Enlightenment switched from, you know, we can know all there is in the universe and everything there is about man. And then the Romanticism is much more about the next step, about the realization that that's not necessarily going to happen. Number 4, Randy Newman. I got a bunch of Randy Newman songs. Sail Away is one of my favorite. Randy Newman is, many people know him from the Toy Story guy and Short People and I Love LA, but he is a harsh critic at times. And he does this song called Sail Away, which is very critical of Europeans and the exploitation of the New World. Number 3, going along the age of exploration, here's my Animaniacs, and this is the Ballad of Magellan. The kids love it because the Animaniacs are one of the most popular kid shows in the 90s, and they just do this cute little song about Magellan, and then now he gets Then he gets killed in the Philippines, and it's just they bang, they hit you. Like, the kids are like, yay! And my final two are the ones that the kids just hum over and over again. Number two is the entire history of the Soviet Union done to the medley of Tetris. It is the most, you will just keep singing it. Dun, 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 dun. But he talks about the Romanovs and Lenin and then through Gorbachev and then post Gorbachev. And it's like, oh my gosh. And it's such a well done song. And you have to watch the music video with that one because it goes with it. But number one is the craziest, weirdest song.
And it's my kids are obsessed with this. Like randomly, I will come in and somebody's got it playing on a Chromebook. Like,
okay,
I don't know why they love it.
So it's not
so
just
much.
California kids, because I'm glad Oklahoma kids do the same too. They're obsessed with it. The song is from a band called Genghis Khan, and the song is called Genghis Khan. And Amy, do your kids love the German or the English version?
They watch the German version because they want to watch the dude dance.
Hands down, they love the German version. You can hear the English version, and it's like, oh, Genghis Khan running through the hills of Mongolia. Yeah, but no, they want it. They don't want the German. There's this dancer. Scott's highlighting it right now. I can see him highlighting it.
You have to look this up. You play it just for the shock value for the kids because. Hey. But then
you got to teach them to dance. Hey.
Oh yeah.
Oh. Hey.
You do pirouettes across the room and it's.
You gotta watch Genghis Khan. The kids will love it. You've just made their year. It's campy.
Oh my gosh. Have you guys
1970s?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
You found a nugget, man. Yeah.
Disco. I don't even know what this is.
Like, it's ABBA and Genghis Khan and Boney M is the same way too. I mentioned them earlier. That's this genre.
It's like ABBA and David Bowie, like Ziggy Stardust.
I mean, like you're ready for you're ready for some I don't know how to explain it other than it is an experience.
It's an experience.
You have to see it to believe it.
They don't need to be doing world history. Just play it for them. Trust me.
They'll go be your desk for your stash or something.
Okay, here's my honorable mention, and Scott will come back. And if anybody has any thought of any other ones too, you can jump in. My honorable mention is from The History of the World, Part One, Mel Brooks, The Spanish Inquisition.
Let's begin the Inquisition.
Yeah, because I play the kids like, here's a documentary on the Inquisition, and then they break out in the whole the swimming piece.
The synchronized
just,
swimming.
Synchronized swimming just is. Another one, I mentioned Randy Newman before. Here's another one about Karl Marx. It's called The World's Not Fair, about Karl Marx and where he started from. Some more critical. Dave Matthews does one on Cortez the Killer. So here's some hardcore ones. Led Zeppelin's Their Immigrant Song. It's about Vikings. Like some of these some of the big time heavy metal. Those dudes love history.
Oh, you know? Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden is off the charts. Those guys are like history teachers.
They are. They are. I mean, it's crazy. Kids don't believe that. And then you pull it up and you start talking about Iron Maiden. They're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Iron Maiden, Alexander the Great, Iron Maiden, Crimean War, Iron Maiden, Native Americans. Like that's what their songs are all about. Run to the hills. Like run to the hills is literally like run away from the Americans because they're going to kill you.
When we're promoting this this episode, we really have to put in there that you get to hear people sing. Us sing. And although that may be like the way to not promote the podcast.
And the final two songs that I play these in my class, these are the last ones I end with, is when I get to the idea about globalization. I like to I'm a Coca-Cola addict, and I like to play them that classic 1970s commercial. I like to buy the world of Coke, because I tie that with the book that we read, which is the history of the world, six glasses, about how the
that's
most
a good connection
it is and how Coca-Cola is the second most universal known word in the world. Wow. And number one is okay. And two is Coca-Cola. And talk about how a product has really transcended. It could be. And then my final one it's not necessarily historical, but it's what I play. I actually play a song I got it timed. And it's U2, Where the Streets Have No Name. I got a live version. It's from them in Chicago in 2005, I believe. And I talk over the song towards the end and tell them about how social studies and history is more than necessarily just the studying, the memorization, but it's about being active and knowing the world around you so you can be part of it. You can be part of history, be part of now. And U2, I think, is a great example of being proactive. And so then I let the song finish and I walk out the door and hopefully time it so the bell rings and I try to shake their hands on the way out. And music, in many ways, music defines kind of all of my classes, and it sounds like it does for a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's so cool.
Powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And Scott, you got a couple late ones to jump
in. I'm sorry. I think, Amy, you were talking about some teacher songs on there that just kind of reminded me. Too Late to Apologize, a declaration.
That is amazing. They also have that one on women's rights to Gaga.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, yeah.
But it's awesome. I mean, you got, you know, Jefferson and King George, and they're all just like tweaking out, singing that it's too late to apologize.
Oh, when he starts playing the fiddle.
Yes.
Like he does, instead of the piano solo, it's the fiddle solo. Oh, it's amazing.
Is this like the history teachers, the ones that do the...
No, this one, Too Late to Apologize, a Declaration, the group is called Sumo. And they only have the two out because they're high quality. I mean, they're like legit. Music video quality. Mm-hmm. They're good. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, a lot of you will probably do that, right? You run to YouTube and you type in almost any subject and music parody, you're going to get... There's the history teachers who do some and a bunch of others who do these parodies and the plus the raps, the rap battles. There's a lot of stuff that are out there, but definitely check those first to see.
Yeah, clear those first.
And so the other ones right along those lines, I just put his YouTube channel out there, but Mr. Betts' class, if you teach U.S. history, mm-hmm. he's got a lot of just fun parody songs for whatever, you know, wherever you are. Some are better than others, but they all, I think, find a nice.
He gives it the good college try.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He definitely,
Oh, he does them himself. Oh,
yeah.
Oh. He sits in his office and sings.
Yeah. Like I said, awesome. Mr. Betts, you are the man. All right.
That's right.
You to know that.
I've not seen it before. These are pretty nice quality.
They're funny. They're
good.
It's kind of a mixed bag, but there's a lot of stuff on there and it covers a lot of things. So I just want to make sure we get those two on. And I couldn't figure out where they went on my list. So I just added 11 and 12.
Gotcha. Hey, and so everybody, so that's like when he's talking about the playlist that Mr. Bett has, Bett's because it's his songs. But I was mentioning burning CDs. We all can do those nowadays in terms of you make your own playlist and you share those with kids. They don't need to be your songs. You find those songs. And I think a lot of us know YouTube, but you know how to be able to make your own playlist. Find a song, say add to playlist and say, call it my year greatest hits or this unit songs. And then you just share that with your kids in whatever way. And it's a wonderful way. Now you can be able to give those kids those songs. So they're not necessarily having to hunt them down on their own and you can leave them with something relatively easy nowadays.
Yeah.
So, hey, I know a bunch of you are probably listening thinking, man, you probably found some nuggets, but you probably are wondering and maybe sitting in the car saying, wait, you didn't mention X, Y, and Z. So we'd love to hear from you. Please tell us Please tell us what we left out and share out, please, what songs that you think teachers would love to be able to use in their classes.
Yeah, by all means, tag us on Twitter if you're on there. Yeah. Those are great.
Yeah.
Because I've just found several things I'm going to, enhance my students' learning experience with.
Yay. Yay. And we usually like to end up with what we're talking about next time, but I don't think we've talked about it.
Nope.
No, I don't think it'll be a surprise on that one yet.
It'll be a surprise. But anyway, well, thanks everybody for giving us a listen. And like we said, please share out what are songs did you guys have? And great show, everybody. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Woo.
Awesome.
Until next time.
Until next time. We'll talk to you.
Party on, Wayne.